So, thanks to the organizers for bringing me here to this very exciting meeting. This is the title as given by organizers.
Okay.
And this is what I'm basically going to speak about. What is a JEDI record 10 to minus 10 spin tune precision is good for the EDM? Okay. For the EDM at COSI specifically. This is a sort of theoretical part of this study of the experiment carried out in 2014 was mostly worked out by Artyom Saleyev, a PhD student, by Frank Kratman and myself.
Can you also talk beyond EDM?
No. Okay, EDM signal is precession of spin in the electric field. This precession is basically identical to what MDM is doing in the B field. The electrical neutrons can readily be stored in bottles and subjected to strong E fields. But as soon as you subject charged protons and neutrons to electric fields, they will probably fly away from your apparatus. Therefore, the only way to have E fields acting on charged particles is to have the E fields a companion to a B field as a combining force in a storage ring. No other way around. However, as I already have seen, EDM, the expected EDM, is absolutely minuscule compared to magnetic moments. Therefore, one must make a challenge is to disentangle the teeny EDM torque on spin from the much stronger.
Get it?
Yeah. No, it's a.
Not more complicated than driving a car.
Yeah. I don't drive a car. I'm biker and pedestrian. And from the MDM in imperfection magnetic fields. And the prime motivation for the JEDI 2014 run at COSI was basically to see whether the Yannis Mercedes idea of the RF beam filter approach to EDM at all magnetic fields is viable or not. And as soon as you think of a realistic ring, you have imperfection magnetic fields, and the issue is because of the very large MDM compared to EDM, whether these fields are a showstopper or not. And the idea behind this experiment was that ultra-high precision spin tune can be turned into a unique probe of the spin dynamics in a ring. And the accomplishment from this experiment is that we have the first in situ measurement of the stable spin axis in a storage ring to micro rad precision. Okay, so this is a COSI, and in COSI there are two coolers which have two solenoids, and those two solenoids we have been used by us as a two makeshift solenoids to study the imperfection structure of the ring. And here is the Eder polarimeter, and Frank already explained how it is operated. I just repeat this Frenkel-Thomas BMT equation. It contains two components for the spin precession. One is coming from the MDM interaction, second from the EDM. And the EDM component is here eta is ratio of the EDM to MDM. That's typo here. And the EDM piece is proportional to the Lorentz force, which is acting on a particle. When it comes to spin, the principal quantity is a spin rotation matrix per single revolution. And what the EDM is doing in a all magnetic field is that you have here motion electric field which is acting on EDM. And this motion electric field has two effects. One of them is a tilt of the stable spin axis and change of the spin tune. from the canonic value for pure if EDM were zero. Okay, so I just repeat this argument that MDM is allowed by all symmetries, but EDM is P and CP forbidden. You have to pay price 10 to minus 7 for the parity violation. You have to price 10 to minus 3 for the CP violation. Therefore, sort of natural scale where the physics starts is 10 to minus 24. It means that it's at least 10 orders in magnitude smaller than MDM. EDM is a flavor neutral operator. And in the standard model, it is a CP violation is flavor changing. Therefore, you have to invoke weak interaction once again to bring the flavor back to change of the flavor back to zero. Therefore, the standard model is 10 to minus 31, which means that it's 10 to minus 17 compared to MDM. So it's really a real challenge to go after so small numbers. Now comes a point about the wind filter. You cannot apply to a beam radial magnetic field because the radial magnetic field shall immediately excite collective vertical Betatron motion, which is a no-go. For that reason, Yannis Mercedes came up with an idea of using the applying electric field, radial electric field, and in the wind filter mode. But in the wind filter mode means that you have a vanishing Lorentz force, and vanishing Lorentz force means that such a device is transparent to the EDM. You remember Thomas BMT equation? However, the magnetic field plus motional magnetic field from the electric field is non-zero. Therefore, it is causing frequency modulation of the spin tune. And that frequency modulation of the spin tune, if the radio frequency is tuned to the spin tune, is causing effect spin resonance, and the resonance strength is proportional to that tilt of the spin axis caused by EVM in the motional electric field times a spin kick in the wind filter. It's really, at the beginning when Yannis came up with this idea, almost everybody said that no, it cannot work. I must confess that I was quiet. I didn't understand the point, but I was quiet, but I understood pretty soon. Now, how can I measure this quantity in here? You just put in artificial imperfection, artificial magnetic field, and then look at the spin tune as a function of the orientation of that magnetic field axis and the strength and the spin kick in that magnetic field. But as I said, the radial magnetic field is a no-go. Longitudinal one is okay because it doesn't affect the orbit. And if you can do that, you can map the spin tune as a function of the axis orientation and the spin kick, and you can measure the stable spin axis. So how to proceed at COSY? First of all, COSY is a design of 80s, and it has never been meant to be a precision spin ring, because there is no requirement to something greater than 10 to minus 3 or 10 to minus 4. Just no one cared. And roles and offsets of all magnetic elements generate radial and longitudinal imperfection B fields. And MDM in a radial imperfection B field is a direct background to the EDM in a radial motional E field. And the artificial imperfection approach is that you cannot use a radial B field which would disturb the beam orbit. It's a no-go. And longitudinal ones are okay because they don't disturb the orbit. So the idea in general is that you have a prepared beam, you switch on your artificial imperfection, the speed tune shall change. You switch it back, and you can measure this speed tune shift, and from that you can judge what is the orientation of the stable spin axis. Fortunately enough, at COSY we happen to have two coolers with two solenoids. One of the solenoids is a fairly complicated structure made of three solenoids and spheres, etc., etc. But therefore it is not exactly solenoid, but for the purpose of this discussion, it's okay for me to treat it as a solenoid. You have one imperfection, one arc, second imperfection, one arc, it's the total spin transfer matrix per revolution. Now I play a little trick. I simply put here unity matrix. And then this guy in here becomes equivalent to a transfer of one of the imperfections next to the second. So the two imperfections now are sitting together at one point, and this is a full ring matrix. And if you look at this imperfection, this transfer amounts to rotation of the effective magnetic field axis of that imperfection from the longitudinal to it acquires the radial component. So I managed to generate effectively radial magnetic field in a manner which doesn't disturb the orbit. Okay, orbit-wise it's neutral, but spin-wise I have all orientations of my artificial imperfection. And then you can write down how the spin tune is changing. It has two components. There are two spin kicks in two orbits, and there are two rotated imperfection axis and the axis which I didn't affect. So it just looks like it's a parabola. It's a second parabola, but with a different sign. Therefore, the theory predicts, for in that case, a saddle point behavior. Now, Frank showed that there are the spin tune at COSY has some walk. And this simply shows that if you start with a baseline spin tune measurement, it has a spread of, it's not 10 to minus 10, it has a spread of about around 10 to minus 8. However, if you compare the baseline measurement before the solenoid was turned off and after the solenoid was switched off, then you realize that the walk of the spin tune is one order of magnitude better, something like 10 to minus 3 times 10 to minus 9. It's already much better. I skip this. The measurements are simply showing that you are really having a predicted saddle point property. However, it looks here just fine, but if you subtract this theoretical formula from the experimental data, you are left with the residuals, which are about 1% of the experimentally observed spin tune. Therefore, my simplified formalism, where I assume that my solenoids are exactly aligned along the beam, doesn't work. It's good to 1%, but 1% is already a very large departure from the experiment. It's typically 10 sigma departure from the theory from experiment. Okay? Therefore, we need to understand what is going on. And what is what you look at the present, not the top quality beam position monitors. As soon as you switch, it's just shown for one of the solenoids. You see that the solenoid is not perfect. It has a some stereo effect because its axis is not perfectly aligned along the beam. So it distorts the beam, but the beam distortion means that now my beam after the solenoid enters the rest of the ring at some angle, and therefore all the radial and vertical imperfection fields, they are different from what used to be before. And that one of the just good examples is that it's a count rate when you switch the solenoid artificial imperfection on. the count rate jumps, which means that simply the beam moved closer to the polarimeter. Of course, then polarimeter eats out, absorbs all those particles which are close to that, therefore the count rate jumps, loss goes down to normal. And then you switch off the solenoid off, and the beam moved away from the target. And then heating of the beam for extraction of the particles to the target takes over, and then you are again back to this level. So, now, of course, the Cauchy ring and Cauchy beam position monitors, the beam position monitors are simply sort of attached to a beam pipe. But the beam pipe has never been meant to be ideally lying in an ideal plane. Therefore, we simply don't know what the actual orbit in Cauchy is to the desired precision. Therefore, we can only resort now to some spin trackers like Cauchy infinity, which is a famous one in the field. And the default setting of the orbit is that all the stereo magnets, all the stereo solenoids are off. And then you can try different settings of solenoids, of stereo magnets, and here just two reference orbits. You start with entirely different orbits. And then you switch on your solenoid on. If it is theoretically tilted at some angles, and you see that the orbit excursions, they don't depend on the setting of the initial orbit. It's a trivial property of the linear optics, nothing spectacular, basically. And then you can, Cauchy infinity allows to calculate the spin transfer matrix for the whole ring, including the solenoid. Then I take that transfer matrix and multiply by the inverse of the solenoid matrix, of the artificial interference matrix, and I will obtain the spin transfer matrix for the ring, including those orbit excursions. And you can see that, again, it was just for sort of, I call it empty ring, when all the stereos were off, and here's for a certain setting of stereos. And you'll see that the stable spin axis changes, but this change doesn't depend on the initial orbit setting. The spin tune is also changing. It's here quadratic behavior, here it is shifted quadratic behavior. The quadratic term is universal, and there is a linear shift which is non-universal. It depends on the orbit settings. And with all that knowledge, you can go and then write down the now corrected formula for the spin tune change, where you must include here a modification of the ring spin tune because of the orbit excursions and modifications of the stable spin axis. And the net effect of that, I'm not going to spend time on that, is that the effect of all those excursions looks like you are like a superficial rescaling of the spin kick in the artificial imperfections. It's like the current must be recalibrated, but it is not because of the power supplies. The power supplies are okay, but simply the effect of the orbit excursion is such. And this, if you make a fit, you end up with a spin or spin axis projections onto the plane, which are, can be determined to better than micro rad accuracy. Now, you can now tune, having done this job from this spin tune mapping, now you can tune those artificial imperfections such that they cancel those non-zero values of the spin axis down to the accuracy which is available. Simply, I'm making the orbit ideal this way. But this standard thing, it's not nothing spectacular. It's standard thing that you are really correcting the orbit and correcting the momentum orbit and spin orbit just by steerers. It looks like a steerer. And after you have done that, you can sort of can put a tentative upper bound on the electric dipole moment. Why tentative? Because you cannot really separate this way magnetic imperfection, magnetic contribution from the EDM contribution, because they are coming together. But if I sort of assume that there are no strong cancellations between the two, then the upper bound on the sum can be viewed as a bound for each component separately. It's a tentative, it's not exact. And in order to proceed further, one really has to develop not such a simple artificial imperfection, but something more complex, such that it only shall act on the spin, but not on the orbit. It's quite non-trivial, but it can be done. Okay, and the final point is that this is really in situ measurement of the spin tune, and this measurement can be done continuously, just in a cycle of 100 seconds, and or even shorter, and it can be used as a for the feedback to keep the spin tune of the whole system constant, to stabilize it. So that's it.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you, Koya.
Have you considered applying this technique for G minus 2?
No.
Because the original experiment, the when they fit the oscillations, they have to fit the phase as well, the initial phase. And you lose about a factor of root 2 in statistical sensitivity because of this. Could it be applied to?
I believe so, because it's really not destructive control of what is going on. But I simply didn't have time to think of that.
But the problem is you have to know the phase of the entering muons with a ppm.
No. It's not for G minus
relative,
2.
Relative.
Yeah.
It's relative.
No, what you would like to do is to fit the phase in the fit.
No, that's you lose statistical sensitivity to the frequency because of that. If you have as an input to the fit, you know what the phase is, then that you
exactly,
improve.
But the fit you do for G minus 2 is frequency and phase. You leave the phase as a free parameter, but
correct.
You throw it away because you don't care for it.
Correct.
So if you have to know it to a ppm level if you want to get the frequency to the ppm level. We discussed this in the BNL experiment.
Yeah.
First thing I asked when I came there in the poster.
Okay.
Yannis told me it's not
but this,
people, other
this,
people thought about
this
it.
This level is, what level you're talking about, microradian.
It's a microradian of the stable spin axis, which is available today. You know, it's a...
But it can
be improved, you know, because...
I agree, but you have to get it from an independent way. So
right. Can this spin zone trick get it sensitive with enough precision to improve the physical sensitivity at the moment?
I'm sure there is additional information, because if you want to measure this 10 to minus 6 or 10 to minus 7 radian with compass, you need millions of events. So
it's an intelligent way to tune some magnetic fields longitudinally and to measure a quantity to very high precision. It must be used in some way.
Okay, but we sort of disagreed with each other, but I simply didn't think of that.
I must have missed something. You're trying to tune away an effect which would mimic an EDM signal, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so how do you know you're not also tuning away the EDM signal?
But as I said, that at the moment, I can only sort of suggest tentative upper bound on EDM, as assuming that I'm minimizing a sum of the background plus signal. And my assumption is that there is no strong cancellation between the two. If there is a cancellation, I cannot do anything. I cannot say anything. Okay? If I assume that there is no strong cancellation between the two, then upper bound on the sum can be viewed as a tentative upper bound on a single piece. Yeah, yeah, that's...
Well, you're right. Well, you had it on one slide. You measure NDN plus
EDN. We measured...
Turning the beam to make that go away.
No, but at the moment, I'm perturbing the beam because it so happens that those solenoids were really not aligned properly because no one cared when those solenoids were installed. But now I would like to make sure that using the same technique and much better BPMs, beam position monitors, that I switch on the solenoid and the beam doesn't change. Then I'm safe. I got rid of that extra uncertainties, and then I can really, I'm just much better off. And this accuracy then can be improved by, still by factor of 5, even already at COSY. Yes. Yes.
And if you try to make that go away.
No. This is what I did today. But what I'm saying is that there are ideas on how to make a more sophisticated artificial imperfection such that it only affects EDM, but not MDM, and I can disentangle EDM effect.
Assume something hasn't changed between the time when you had it on and off.
Yeah.
That may or may not be true.
Okay, but this is just what we're working on at the moment. Of course, before we started this experiment, we didn't really have a clear understanding of what is ahead, you know. And this accuracy came out as a, I would say, complete surprise. Because at the beginning, when we started this mapping, we had no idea what is the scale of imperfections in the ring, just none.
This brings me back to my original question. Can you use the spin tune for other things? I mean, this accuracy that you have. I mean,
yes, but the spin tune for other things is you use this spin tune mapping this way just to keep, you can monitor the spin tune and then keep the stability of magnets and control the hysteresis, etc. Just to keep the spin tune flat. Because it shows that there is a walk of the spin tune. The origin of which is today is not quite understood.
I know what he wants to know. I mean, if you consider you have a polarized antiproton beam and a polarized proton beam in a magnetic machine, clockwise, counterclockwise, on exactly the same orbit, and you measure the spin tune to a precision of 10 to minus 11 or 12, that's a CPT test.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's relatively straightforward. For E plus E minus, you can probably already do it. With this technique, or it was done, yeah, but not. I mean, I think with what we now learned, it probably can be improved.
Yeah.
Okay. More questions? Then let's thank all speakers again, and we close the session. Reception is,
you want to say
anything? No, just to remind you that the reception is probably in 5 minutes or so. And dinner at half an hour.